Hello, and welcome to IRI Growth Insights, featuring IRI thought leaders, industry partners, and guests. For more than 40 years, IRI has been known for its invaluable data, but these podcasts delve into the insights the data reveal to fuel market disruption and market growth for those in the CPG, retail, healthcare, and media markets. I'm your host, Joan Driggs, coming to you from IRI's corporate headquarters in Chicago. Today, I have the privilege of speaking with Larry Levin, IRI's Executive Vice President within IRI's Market and Shopper Intelligence Center of Excellence for Consumer and Shopper Marketing Strategy, and my partner on New Product Pacesetters. Larry's widely known for his expertise in consumer goods and shopper behavior, but his claim to fame also includes a guest spot on the TV game show Hollywood Squares, where he won $500 in cash and party gifts. We'll all be winners today because I'll be talking with Larry about his seven deadly sins of product innovation. Sadly, too many in our industry don't take the simple steps to avoid these pitfalls. And even if you are an innovation master, you'll still find value in today's conversation. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Joan. How's it going?
Great. Larry, you have spent your entire career in market research, leading engagements for so many of the world's largest manufacturers and retailers. So I'm thrilled that you've agreed to talk with me today about your nearly famous seven deadly sins of new product innovation. It seems maybe a little negative to start off a podcast series talking about something negative, but I do think that after speaking with you and hearing what you have to say about failure, that there really is a lot of upside to it. So first, to kick us off, tell us what the acronym for failure is all about.
Yeah, so you know, it's kind of funny that you talk about starting out with negativity, because really failure is all about, in this case, as they say, making lemons out of lemonade. Or lemonade out of lemons, whatever the cliche is. And so the whole idea about failure actually started because of a mutual friend of ours, Joan, Dan Mack. And Dan and I were talking one day. He invited me to present to one of his forums. And he's like, come away with something that people can action when it comes to new product innovation. Give me seven deadly sins. And so one day I was just sitting around thinking, what's a great way to talk about seven deadly sins? And it turned out the word failure works out perfectly, because failure has seven letters, and each of the letters can depict what can be or cannot be a driver of success in new product innovation. So you take the F in failure. I like to think of that as the forecast. And when we talk to people, obviously getting the forecast right is job one. And forecasts can work in everybody's favor if you plot your distribution numbers. And let's just say you want to be 40% distribution in the first 2 months and you hit that, or you think you're going to spend $3 million in advertising and you hit that. But there are often times where manufacturers will create a forecast, and let's say they think they're going to be at 40% distribution in 2 months, but it takes them four. Or somebody says to them, you know what, I'm going to get $6 million in advertising, but then business climate changed and they only get $3 million. But by the way, marketing is told by sales that we still have to achieve the same number. And so even though we're going to spend less money to market the product, management still wants us to sell the same amount of units. So there's a lot of things that can make the F in failure, the forecast, be a success or a failure based on the execution of that particular, of that particular product.
Okay. So let's talk about what the acronym for failure is all about. You mentioned forecast. What are the other six letters?
The A is about assortment. Making sure you have the right product in front of the right consumer, because, you know, oftentimes there may be an overall brand that's really appealing, but when you start to think about each store as a snowflake, there may be flavors of a product that are more appealing depending upon the population of the people that are shopping in that store. So oftentimes you really want to be thinking about localized assortment so that you absolutely have the opportunity to meet the needs and wants of the folks that shop in that store. The I is all about incrementality. And I think that this is one of the most important aspects of new product innovation is you tell your collaborative story. And I know, Joan, you and I have talked about this a lot, that incrementality is really not just about how incremental it is to you as a manufacturer, but you really want to tell an enveloping story about the fact that this new product launch will drive our sales by 3%. It's going to have a halo on the category of a point and a half, and it's going to drive the aisle by a quarter point. And so I think the more that, you know, our clients continue to tell a story that's enveloping not just their own product, but what it'll do to the category, what it'll do to the aisle, I think it allows for greater adoption of new products because the buyer of that category gets to see how this new product launch, while it may drive 75% of the incrementality, is going to have a great effect on the rest of the category, the rest of the aisle, and that's a win-win for both the manufacturer right. and the retailer.
I really like the idea of product innovation focusing on the category rather than your company, your brand, because in lifting all boats, it really is drawing needed dynamic attention to a category and it sparks other innovation. So it keeps consumers coming back for that new and that different. So I really like that one a lot.
Right. And it also, you know, creates a friendly competition within the aisle because, you know, I might be the first to market with a certain attribute and other manufacturers want to replicate what we've done so that they can appease potential buyers of their own products or maybe attract competitive buyers over. So I think it's just good for, you know, for the frenemies of a category, if you will.
I was going to say, I'm laughing to myself because of course you're saying friendly competition. And I think that when you're in the trenches, it doesn't always feel so friendly. So frenemy is maybe a better word. So great. Okay.
And if you're laughing to yourself, Joan, why aren't you laughing out loud? Every time we talk, you laugh out loud.
Okay, giggle lightly.
Yeah. You know, that some of the other ones that I think are really important is you certainly don't want your products to languish on the shelf. I think it's really important. And I know you and I have talked about this before, this whole notion about, will you still love me tomorrow? And promoting the product in year two and in the out years, if a product's going to languish on the shelf because we're not seeing support, that's just another dent in the opportunity to drive success for a new product launch. So I think it's really important that manufacturers come with a steady marketing and promotional program that's going to continue to lift awareness because there's a lot of people who don't know about my product. And it's going to perhaps reinvigorate a lapsed user who hadn't thought about my product in a while, but sees it in the aisle and says, you know what, I'm going to go buy this particular new yogurt because I see a flavor that's really appealing to me.
Good. Got it.
You know, the other thing that's really important is the you. I usually think about an unclear positioning. It's just really important. It's all about unclear, but you really want to go 180 degrees and make sure you have a clear positioning of what your product's all about because people need to know what you stand for. What's your brand purpose? How do you communicate the goodness of your brand from different points of interception, whether it's when consumers see me online, whether it's when they see a billboard, whether it's what they see in store. What's that brand purpose? What's that story that's being told to the consumer? Because especially with millennial and Gen Z, who right now are about half the population and will be the big shoppers for the next 40 years, they want to know about your brand purpose. So having a very clear understanding what your brand, what your product stands for is really, really critical. And then you want to make sure that you're not a retread. because it's really hard to get to create market share when you are the third or fourth or fifth product into a very, very competitive category. So you've really got to be sure that your product has unique attributes that can separate it from competition and not appear to be a retread, because a lot of these categories obviously have been established forever, but you have that opportunity with unique positioning, capitalizing on important what we call walking attributes across the store, attributes that consumers really gravitate toward. If you could capitalize on those and you understand those early trends, you have an opportunity to not be almost seen as, you know, the fourth kid on the block with nothing new and different. You really want to make sure that you have attributes that split yourself from the rest of the competition. Then finally, it's about not being elusive. Once the marketing starts for a new product, you want the target consumer to be able to find your product. And I wholly believe in the concept of it's not about perfect distribution, but being distributed perfectly, like you and I have talked forever, Joan. But I think when you start to advertise your product, which is typically around 30% distribution, you want to make sure that people can find it. And I think a great example of a product that may have been a bit elusive, but people went out of their way to find it. Back 7-8 years ago, Chobani was one of our top new product pace setters. And the distribution numbers for Chobani didn't jump much above 40% in the first year and a half. But people went out of their way to find it because it possessed attributes consumers were looking for. Low sugar, high protein, a new consistency with Greek yogurt. So it created a buzz that people said, if I can't find it at this store, I'm going to actually go to another store and go find it. So not all products have that kind of stickiness, but that's, I think, a really important element that Chobani was able to capitalize on. And other products have been able to capitalize on it too, but I think Chobani did it better than anybody.
So Larry, you know, you've been talking about failure for some time, and these are clearly issues. I mean, the acronym came to you so quickly because you've seen this again and again and again. And yet 90% of new product launches still fail to meet some of those critical milestones. Now, what I really like to talk about is, where's the improvement coming from? What have you seen being done right? Are things as bad as all that?
Well, I think one thing we have to think about is that 90% of products fail. Yes, that's true, but half of them fail in test. And I think the more that we can identify products that are not going to meet the expectations that the consumer has for a new product positioning, that management might have for the potential success of a new product, is going to be an important quotient. And so when we think about 90% of products, it's really trying to minimize failure on the products that end up getting launched. And I think one of the ways to minimize failure on the products that get launched is to be much more realistic about what's the size of the prize. And I know, Joan, you and I talk about this all the time, that in the last few years, about 2/3 of new product pace setters, you know, the top 100 food and beverage and the top 100 non-food, failed to exceed $20 million in their first year. And it's really not fail. It's just that products are now being much more targeted to meet consumer needs, to meet consumer populations that may have not necessarily been the go-to-market strategy a few years ago, where products had a wider swoop of consumers they were going after. So I think that part of the success is ratcheting down your expectations. And I think you've seen it. I know I've seen it. When we talk about the first year dollars, people stand up and listen, because this has been happening now for 4 years. And so I think it's really important to be realistic about what's available in that first year as you think about your drivers of success. And it's not to say that successful new product launches and hitting 50, 7,500 million is not attainable. It's just that you need patience, and you need to be thinking about the second year is a way to drive those potential those potential revenue dollars as you go forward.
You know, I think one of the products that we just kind of touched on recently that you had brought up was the Canada Dry Ginger Ale and Lemonade product. In that it's, you know, it's really tracking nicely to be one of our pace setters for 2019. And I think you've got some numbers against that. But at the same time, they're not pushing the distribution to that 100% level. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Canada Dry Lemonade with Canada Dry Lemonade is one of the fascinating new product launches. Like you said, I think from a paysetter perspective, it's tracking towards about $47 to $50 million. And what's interesting is that 70% of its volume, or maybe even a little bit more than that, is coming from new users. So it wasn't a matter of Canada Dry moving users across its product lineup. It was bringing in new consumers, and it did it with 80% distribution, which is still a pretty high distribution number, but Keurig Dr. Pepper created a uniform plan that said, we don't need to be everywhere, but where we need to be are the right stores. And it's interesting when you look at an opportunity map, it's amazing how strong the opportunity is for a product like Canada Dry Lemonade in the Southeast. Disproportionate opportunities in the Southeast and a little bit in the upper Midwest, but it was really fascinating and actually gives KDP an opportunity to think about, not that we don't want our products across the U.S., if you will, but if Keurig Dr. Pepper is thinking about where to put it in a promotional strategy, hitting heavily in the Southeast and in the upper Midwest could be a great strategy for Canada Dry Lemonade, because there is this stronger stronger profile of consumers that match the early adopters of that product to future buyers of that product.
Right. And I loved what you said about really targeting new users, because to me, Canada Dry is a real legacy brand. So I love that they're kind of blending ginger ale with lemonade and creating something really unique for a younger audience.
Yeah. And not only that, as you and I have talked before, now that it's in its second year, penetration numbers in the first year were about 7%. So 7% of U.S. households had actually bought the product. But in the last 2 months, it's actually swelled to 9%. And two points about that. One is the fact that oftentimes we talk as a team about the fact that 30% of trial happens in the second year. And that's another reason that I've adopted this whole idea of will you still love me tomorrow, because you've got to be thinking about the fact that the foundation of your brand is going to expand in year two. It could be because you got added distribution. It could be you added a flavor variety. And in fact, Canada Dry Lemonade added an orange flavor to go along with its flagship flavors. So now you've widened the aperture of people who might be interested, because maybe I didn't necessarily want Canada Dry with lemonade's base product, but now that you've added orange, it opens up to a whole new population of consumers that would think about it. So that, I think, is the perfect recipe for success in the second year, by continuing to innovate with flavor tuck-ins that may get me to come across the aisle, may get you as an original buyer to buy more because you see a wider array of product available. So I think it's a really important area to be thinking about when you think about the second year. And Keurig Dr. Pepper with Canada Dry Lemonade has done a great job in its second year. And I think it's off to the races for a successful second year.
Excellent. Let's talk a little bit more about some of that long-term innovation, and maybe get into a category that has struggled for growth, which to me says soup, like the center store. And talk to me about something that's being done well there.
Well, I like the pun. You know, I think my influence, when you talk about done well, I think about, well, yes, something has been done well. And I think Campbell's has done a really good job with its Well Yes product, which was a new product Pacesetter a couple of years ago. And in fact, our team helped to help Campbell's think about where to best position this product. And is it, and it created a premium product that has, in my mind anyway, beautiful packaging, really lights up the soup aisle. When you walk down the soup aisle and you see these vibrant colors that that Well Yes has across its lineup, I think is really great. And also, the thing that's interesting to me is that Well Yes has some very, very unique flavor profiles that are going to attract millennials, which is really where the lion's share of consumers came from for the first year. And then it also didn't focus on Campbell's being the flagship company. It focused on the name Well Yes, and Campbell's was almost underplayed in terms of its promoting of the product. So Well Yes stands out beautifully. And as a final credentials maker, if you will, backed up by Campbell's. And, right. And another product that's like that to me is We by Yoplait, which I know you and I talk again about all the time.
Love it. Yep.
Our number three Pacesetter, but We by Yoplait capitalized on a few important areas. One was the transparency of its bottle. It's in a glass jar. Consumers pick it up. They know exactly what it stands for. And I know you and our friend Andrew recently were talking about the fact that We by Yoplait comes in a multi-use jar, if you will, because I think Andrew told us that he actually made candles out of it, and I think you used it as a flower pot. So I think it's just kind of fun to see.
There aren't many products out there that have a Pinterest page dedicated to reusing a package. So
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I love the time that you and our friend Andrew were talking, and we talked about how you've used this package a couple different ways. And mm-hmm. certainly you are not atypical. Like you said, you go on the Pinterest page, you see lots of multi-use. And even the advertising that General Mills put together about it suggests to the consumer think about multi-use. So when you talk about brand purpose, I think We by Yoplait did a great job of delivering on brand purpose, maybe better than most of the other new product Pacesetters that we had seen last year. Although one that I know is passionate to you is Love, Beauty, and Planet.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. you know, you think about that here with the, again, the opportunity for a product like Love, Beauty, and Planet to masquerade as a small niche product, but most people don't necessarily recognize that it's actually owned by Unilever.
Yeah, I don't. In fact, I'm bristling a little bit at the notion of masquerade. I really kind of like almost like a boutique brand within the larger company. I just think that they've done it all right. You know, when we were talking about Pacesetters, we made a special note that 51% of new product Pacesetters for 2018 were from small manufacturers. And it's usually these smaller companies that have it built into their DNA to do the right thing, you know, very socially responsible, very transparent. And it's the bigger companies that are now taking their cue and in many instances snapping up these smaller brands. But I just give Unilever so much credit for just doing it on their own. And I hope that we see that level of transparency and clean label and tapping into all the right messages, building the right community around these products. Even like my favorite, I think, is the water, like the paying attention to how much water you're using. It's just brilliant all the way around.
Yeah, no.
So, Larry, in wrapping up, I want to thank you for once again sharing your failure acronym, the forecast, assortment, incrementality, languish, unclear positioning, retread, and elusive. But I wanted to wrap it up with just three things for listeners to think about, and that is that new product innovation is long-term. There is, you know, we need to move away from the one-hit wonders and think about what this is going to do for the long-term. And a great way to think about that is to really focus more on what this is doing for the category as a whole rather than just a brand or company, because that's the key to sustainable growth. And then for you, and I know this is your one of your most passionate statements, is think about beyond that year one, beyond year two, into long-term development for the brand. Like, what are complementary flavors or packaging improvements or even more focused and better distribution, because it is all part of that long game. So with that, Larry, I want to thank you again, and I know we'll be talking again soon.
Thanks, Joan. It's been great, and I look forward to seeing you down the road.
All right. Bye.
See you later.
Thank you for listening. Please become a subscriber and let us know what you want to learn more about. We'll serve it up in a future IRI Growth Insights episode. Look for us wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to review IRI Growth Insights. Also, visit us on the web at iriworldwide.com and connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.